Did anyone notice yesterday, while we were setting up, the little talk that Nanda Maharaj, little statement that he made? Nanda Maharaj is such an interesting personality. He's very simple. And all these amazing events are happening in Vrindavan, and then he says, you know, when we talk about Krishna, all our problems seem to go away. Did you hear that? You remember that? He just can't figure it out. He said, we keep talking about what Krishna's done, and when we do it, all of our problems seem to disappear. What's going on? So, chapter 5, that's page 122. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 5, Brahma. Lunch with Krishna. Said Shukadev, your question is delightful. I'm impressed. By now, it seems, you find this Krishna talk is ever fresh. Though pastimes of Lord Krishna are the best thing in this world, most people tell the pastimes of some common boy or girl. Lord Krishna led the boys down to a riverbank and said, let's play in this enchanting spot. Agasura is dead. The fragrant lotus flowers here attract the birds and bees. The sands are soft and white, just right for our activities. The calves can drink and eat the grass along the riverside while we enjoy our lunches. Then we'll all be satisfied. At once the boys sent out the eager calves to drink and graze, while they pulled open lunch bags like some hungry young gourmets. Lord Krishna sat, surrounded by the boys and looking pleased, a lotus whorl surrounded by its petals and its leaves. Each boy sat facing Krishna, hoping he would glance their way. Thus eating lunch became for them another kind of play. The boys used flowers, leaves, or rocks as plates to hold their meal, as one by one the items in each lunch bag were revealed. One boy would taste the dishes that another brought from home. Devouring half, he'd have a laugh and share half of his own. Almighty Krishna eats the food that's offered day and night by Pukka priests in formal feasts with proper Vedic rites. This time, however, Krishna ate without formality among his dear associates and loving devotees. Lord Krishna sat among his friends and chortled in delight. His flute hung to his left side and his bugle to his right. He held a lump of yogurt, rice, and fruit in his right hand. The gods looked on and stood in awe, but could not understand. While all the boys enjoyed their lunch, the calves enjoyed theirs too, and wandered off in search of tender foliage to chew. On noticing the missing calves, the boys were struck with fear, but Krishna said, enjoy your lunch. I'll bring the calves back here. Though Krishna rules creation through assorted agencies, he gets involved directly when it comes to devotees. His rice ball still in hand, he left his friends at peace and rose to seek the calves in fields of grass and fertile forest groves. Stealing the boys and calves. From high above, Brahma had seen Agasura's demise, as well as this ensuing lunch. This left him quite surprised. Deciding to put Krishna to a test, Brahma came down and hid away the boys and calves while he was not around. When Krishna soon returned to where the lunch had taken place, he found no boys or calves at all, just empty, open space. Although he showed astonishment while looking here and there, he knew at once Brahma had hidden all his friends somewhere. Within a moment, Krishna chose to answer this new ploy by mystically expanding to replace each missing boy. The all-pervading Lord became each boy in full detail, from lunch bag, bugle, flute, and foot to face and fingernail. The new boys had the old boys' ages, habits, traits, and names. replacement clothes and ornaments fit each boy just the same. Once he'd become the boys, the Lord became the calves as well, so perfectly that even their own mothers couldn't tell. The party danced their way back home with Krishna at the head. Each boy returned to his own house, each calf to its own shed. Each mother filled their secret urge for Krishna as their son by nursing their respective boys, not knowing what he'd done. As Krishna all at once portrayed each missing cowherd boy, their mothers did their duties with extraordinary joy. They bathed, massaged, and dressed their sons before the evening meal, surprised to find these routine tasks infused with such appeal. Although the cowherd parents always loved their sons before, they secretly had loved young Krishna just a little more. Distinctions between Krishna and their sons now disappeared, and they adored their sons more every day throughout the year. The cows, meanwhile, mooed loudly when their calves came in their sheds, and licked them with maternal love from tail and hoof to head. Their udders overflowed with milk and didn't seem to shrink as their respective offspring drank up all that they could drink. A year went by, and even Balaram did not catch on as he joined Krishna and the boys each day in work and song. One day on Govardhan, however, he became amazed to see the older cows charge down that hill on which they grazed. Although these cows had younger calves, their hearts were deeply stirred with powerful maternal love on seeing Krishna's herd. They galloped down a rocky trail, their heads and tails erect. Their forelegs worked like two legs, and their humps slid to their necks. The cowherd men, amazed as well, could not hold back the charge, and soon the cows reached Krishna's calves, their udders full and large. They nursed and licked these long-weaned calves as if to eat them whole. The cowherd men, ashamed and angry, struggled for control. They scurried down the rocky slope, but when they reached their sons, the boys who played with Krishna, their affection left them stunned. Their own parental feelings swelled. Their shame and anger fled as, lovingly, they held their sons and smelled their tender heads. When Balaram saw all of this, he wanted to explore why everyone's affection had grown stronger than before. Some new event is causing all these feelings to arise. Perhaps these boys and calves are really gods in some disguise. Could this be Krishna's handiwork? Why, who else could it be? Yes, only those illusions made by Krishna work on me. So Balaram asked Krishna to explain the whole affair, and both of them remembered on that day he'd not been there. Lord Balaram was absent when Lord Krishna made his clones, for it had been his birthday, and his mother kept him home. And when his birthday came again, his mother made him stay, so Krishna once again went out with him, without him for the day. A year to us is to Brahma a minute's time elapsed, the time it took to put the boys and calves in mystic naps. Returning to Vrindavan on his swan, he was surprised to see the stolen calves and boys right there before his eyes. Brahma exclaimed, "These boys and calves are safe in hibernation, yet Krishna is surrounded by some perfect imitations. Where have they come from? Who are they? I cannot understand how Krishna's friends stayed here all year in spite of all my plans." Brahma had tried in mystic pride to baffle Krishna's mind. Instead, he found himself confused, his own plans undermined. The power of Brahma next to Lord Krishna's fades away as brilliant snow grows dull at night, or glowworms pale by day. To show Brahma the secret truth of what had just occurred, Lord Krishna let the boys and calves again be who they were. At once Brahma saw Krishna at the center of a drove of monsoon-bluish Vishnus clad in silken yellow robes. Each Vishnu had four jeweled arms with bracelets on each wrist and four hands holding lotus flower, conch shell, club, and disc. Kaustubha gems hung from their necks, their ornamented feet and Srivatsa marks on their chests made each Vishnu complete. A forest flower garland reached the sashes round each waist, and garlands strung from tulasi were very nicely placed on each and every portion of their transcendental forms by devotees who loved to be where kirtan is performed. Such devotees surrounded every Vishnu in the throng and pleased their lords respectively with service, dance, and song. Each Vishnu smiled as brightly as the moon in ecstasy, exchanging loving glances with his faithful devotees. Brahma could see each Vishnu had divine authority to rule the vast creation and its multi-energies. Their endless, blissful, brilliant forms beyond the greatest mind, Brahma saw both as God and boy, and both at the same time. This vision stunned Brahma with transcendental ecstasies. He felt himself a doll before such sacred deities. Brahma, the lord of Saraswati, queen of education, could not begin to slightly understand the situation. Brahma had tried to realize Lord Krishna on his own, but only through submission is Lord Krishna ever known. Brahma was wholly mystified. His purpose now fulfilled, Lord Krishna showed Brahma the truth by his transcendent will. Brahma regained his senses like one rising from the dead and stared through independent eyes in each of his four heads. He saw Vrindavan's forests and their pleasant atmosphere, replete with life-sustaining trees that pleased throughout the year. Vrindavan, that enchanting place where Krishna is always first, is free of all such agonies as hunger, hate, and thirst. The tigers, chimps, and other beasts who threaten common men live side by side with humans there as transcendental friends. Brahma then saw the absolute, all-knowing, and most grand, a single roaming cowherd boy with rice ball in his hand. We think a man is ordinary till he makes a move, but Krishna, as a simple boy, had nothing else to prove. As Krishna wandered here and there, Brahma jumped off his swan and fell down like a golden rod, his foolish pride now gone. Though gods avoid the touch of earth, Brahma laid on the ground to bathe Lord Krishna's feet with tears and touch them with his crowns. Remembering what he had seen, his ecstasy complete, Brahma stood up and fell again at Krishna's lotus feet. Again he stood and wiped his eyes, his head in humble pose, and said, in heartfelt mantras he instinctively composed, Brahma repents. O Krishna, you are God himself. Who would have known it's you, a simple child with yellow robes and monsoon-colored hue? You carry flute and bugle, peacock feathers dress your hair. Your fingers hold a rice ball, and a garland scents the air. I kidnapped all your friends and calves, a blunder, I admit, so you have kindly chastised me for my own benefit. No one, including me, can estimate your potencies, nor understand your happiness or your activities. When thoughtful people give up speculating over you in favor of admiring talks about the things you do, while filling social duties, doing all that must be done, they conquer you, who otherwise can conquer anyone. But stubborn people still believe the truth lies in their heads. Abandoning your loving smile, they speculate instead. They think and think, but trouble is the only thing they gain, like one who beats on empty husks of wheat in search of grain. Some yogis, through devotion, catch a fleeting glimpse of you. Renunciates may see you from tangential points of view. The wise may count the atoms of the earth or flakes of snow, but who can count the transcendental qualities you show? A person who anticipates your mercy, all the while persisting in the face of every obstacle and trial, while offering respects to you within his very core, obtains a claim to your domain and love forevermore. My lord, I'm so uncivilized. Instead of trusting you, I stole your friends and hid them in my secret rendezvous. How could I have imagined fooling someone so much higher compared to you? I'm just a spark within a blazing fire. Though I create the universe, its planets, stars, and sky, my independent spirit has turned out to be a lie. My arrogance disgraces me. My pride has been betrayed. Lord Krishna, please forgive me for disturbing you this way. Yes, I create this universe, a pot that locks me in, but countless universes pass through poreholes in your skin, like particles of dust float through a screen on wisps of air. Can someone 7 stretches of his hand in height compare? Please treat me as a pregnant woman welcomes with a smile the wriggling and kicking of her helpless unborn child. A lotus from your navel gave me birth, Lord, so I pray that you'll forgive your child who has offended you today. You gave me birth, then stranded me atop a lotus flower. I searched for you in vain until you came by your own power. But Yashoda did nothing more than check your mouth for sand, and you showed her the universe. How can I understand? I don't create this universe. You make it by yourself. You then make me, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, just to help. And then you put us all away. Again you're on your own, just as today you conjured boys, but now you're all alone. If one mistakes a rope to be a snake, he shakes in fear. But when he sees it's just a rope, his terror disappears. Without you, Lord, I live like that. Whatever I may do, I'll live in fear of death within this world till I see you. But when the light of your association fills the sky, the darkness of illusion fades, and all is pacified. Can your devotee suffer everlasting dread or fright? Can someone living on the sun be touched by day or night? A person serving you is automatically set free, while other so-called mystics live a hopeless fantasy. Imagining they're liberated, rising up in pride, they miss you and fall down again, their minds unpurified. These simple boys and calves are far more fortunate than I. Though I create the universe, they're fully satisfied to simply play their forest games with you, their dearest friend. You drink their mother's breast milk, Lord. How can I comprehend? Please let me take a future birth within this sacred land. But if that is impossible, I'll gladly wait and stand embodied as a blade of grass in meadows just nearby, in hopes some cowherd boy will step on me as he runs by. So very kind are you, my Lord, that you shall never shun a person giving service, even when it's poorly done. When Putana, that horrid witch, gave you her poisoned breast, you took her as your mother and released her after death. So how will you pay back the loving service given you by these Vrindavan residents in everything they do? The sages claim attachment is an anguishing mistake, but these great souls, attached to you, live only for your sake. And fools claim they have realized God. As far as I'm concerned, to know you, Krishna, takes much more than everything I've learned. So please excuse this fallen soul and go on to enjoy more lunchtime past pleasures with your calves and friends, the cowherd boys. Your sun-like presence brightens all your friends and family. Your moon-like smile enriches Brahmins, gods, the earth, and seas. Until the sun globe vanishes, until the planets fall, please take my humble service. I ask nothing else at all. Brahma then walked 3 times around Lord Krishna, bowing low. Lord Krishna smiled and nodded, indicating he could go. Then Krishna went back to his friends. Although a year had passed, the boys, entranced in mystic sleep, thought moments had elapsed. Surprised at Krishna's quick return, the boys at once declared, "You're back? All right, let's share our lunch our mothers have prepared." Lord Krishna grinned, sat down again, and joined the lunchtime fun. They next found all the calves and headed home, their workday done. With bugles, flutes, and forest garlands, dabbed in reddish clay, each boy resembled Krishna in his own distinctive way. They danced back to Vrindavan, with Govinda at the fore, and everyone who saw the scene loved Krishna even more. Arriving at the village, all the boys cried out in song, a giant serpent swallowed us. He stretched out 8 miles long. But Krishna grew so big inside, he choked the demon's wind. So we marched out without a scratch and came back home again. A question on love. I see, said Vishnurata, who'd been sitting very still. They didn't know a year had passed since Agha had been killed. I'm puzzled by a single point. How did the mothers come to love the Lord's expansions more than they love their own sons? Said Sukadeva, the living being loves himself much more than parents, wife, or children. They're extensions, nothing more. This self-love, say the learned, only comes about because Lord Krishna loves us living beings first, despite our flaws. Since Krishna loves us, even though we're fallen entities, it's possible for us to love ourselves and feel at ease. The active force is Krishna, so the mothers of his friends felt greater love for him on whom their own self-love depends. You heard about Lord Krishna and his friends attending cows. You heard Brahma's mistake and his remorseful prayers and vows. By hearing and reciting these events as they transpired, you soon shall fill your deepest heartfelt spiritual desires. So, Krishna Kripa Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So I have a few points from the Krishna book that I found interesting. First is that when the Krishna was sitting in the center and all his friends were sitting around him, each cowherd boy manifested his relationship with Krishna, a different relationship, and Krishna could reciprocate with each his friends. And another point Prabhupada mentions is that when the Krishna expanded himself into cowherd boys, so these were the Vishnu Rupa, the Vishnus himself, and they were not the manifestation of his mystic power as of the yogis or demigods. Just like a sun can be reflected in several pots, but the reflection is not the sun. So one may think that these Vishnu forms that Krishna expanded into were just like that, but they were not. They were Vishnu themselves, the real Vishnus. Okay, another point was that the older men took care of the cows and the younger men took care of the calves, and both cows and calves were kept separate so that the calves do not drink all the available milk of the cows. So I found this also interesting. And we found when Lord Brahma offered his prayers to Krishna, then and when Krishna came back, so Srila Prabhupada writes here, as soon as Brahma left, Lord Krishna immediately returned to the bank of the Yamuna and rejoined his calves and cowherd boyfriends, who were situated just as they had been on the very day they had vanished. So when Krishna came back, all his friends were sitting exactly in the same position and doing the same activities just on the day they vanished. So then the boys were thinking like that. When Krishna appeared before the boys, they thought, Krishna has returned within a minute. They began to laugh, thinking that Krishna was not willing to leave their lunchtime company. They were very jubilant and invited him. Dear friend Krishna, you have come back so quickly? All right. We have not yet begun our lunch, not even taken one morsel of food, so please come and join us and let us eat together. Krishna smiled and accepted their invitation, and he began to enjoy the lunchtime company of his friends. While eating, Krishna was thinking, these boys believe that I have come back within a second, but they do not know that for at least 1 year I have been involved with the mystic activities of Lord Brahma. So this pastime shows that how faithful were his friends and how they had so much of faith in Krishna. Although Krishna is the supreme controller, but they had so much faith in Krishna. So I found this interesting. Hare Krishna.
Om Jnanati Mrimnasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshu Unmili Tamiyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So first of all, I want to start by thanking Kalakanta Prabhu for writing this amazing poem that we're reading. I didn't appreciate the earlier ones as much as this one because I'd read the Krishna book and I read Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentaries, and I read some of the shlokas from the Bhagavatam, and just to see how these particular details that were mentioned were captured in the poem very nicely, it was very inspiring to see that very creative words were used to present these nice stories and philosophical points. So thank you very much. So basically I have two things I was going to focus on. One is the different insights Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur had, especially about the pastime itself. And then just some of those prayers by Brahma, some of them are quoted very frequently by Srila Prabhupada and other people who speak on the Bhagavatam because they have a lot of important philosophical points that that it's good for us devotees to understand. So I'll talk about maybe five or six of these prayers of Lord Brahma. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he was talking about how the boys were all sitting around Krishna, as it was described in the poem, that like petals of the lotus, Krishna's like the center of the lotus, and each of the boys are like petals. And Krishna set it up in such a way that each boy was thinking that Krishna's looking straight at me. In fact, he described it as, each boy thought, I'm sitting in front, directly facing Krishna, but the other boys are sitting at a distance where their backs are sides to Krishna. So this is the wonderful beauty of Krishna, that he can make us feel special in our relationship with him, even though he has millions and trillions of other living entities who are also in relationship with him. And by his mystic power, he does that to reciprocate their love. He said actually there were so many cowherd boys there wasn't even a space between them. They're all like side by side, like in this circle, like touching each other. He also talked about while they were taking lunch, they would joke around and different things they would do in the course of their joking. Like one of them would take a flower and stick it in a samosa and then give it to another boy. And then as he ate it, he would make a really strange face when he bit into the flower, and they would all laugh. So this Vishwanatha Chakravarti, has very highly advanced in love of Krishna, and therefore he gets special insight into these pastimes. he also made the point that that these boys are actually eternal associates of Krishna. So how is it that Lord Brahma could actually, by his material power, like mystify them? And he argues that Krishna actually put the boys to sleep himself in response to Brahma's desire, not that Brahma's, you know, power was able to, you know, put the boys to sleep. Then he mentions four different lessons that Krishna meant to teach through this pastime. One, that Krishna's mystic power is so great that it can bewilder every living entity in the universe. Even our Lord Balaram himself, for many, many days, was mystified. It was only toward the end he got some clue, this must be Krishna's power, but for like almost the whole year he was also mystified. Another reason for the pastime is that all the cowherd the elderly cowherd boys, or cowherd men and cowherd ladies, they all also, like Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they also feel paternal affection for Krishna. But they couldn't actually, they had their own kids, so they couldn't really express it to the extent that Nanda and Yashoda could. But by becoming all these cowherd boys, then each elderly gopa, each elderly gopi, they could actually relate personally with Krishna for a whole year and give them that spiritual pleasure. So that was another reason. And then another reason was to bewilder Brahma and put him in an ocean of dismay. This was basically, he explains that actually to think that to actually use your power against Krishna is actually a big offense. So this lila is described as the Brahma Vimohana lila. So Mohana means to bewilder, and Vimohana means to bewilder in a big way. So that's because Brahma was so proud, thinking, "Yeah, I'm going to bewilder Krishna." Then Krishna says, "Okay, I'm going to bewilder you." So another thing that another feature of it is that basically the Vishnu form of Krishna is the worshipable deity of Lord Brahma. Actually, Brahma is described as arising out of the lotus flower coming from Lord Vishnu. So he actually takes pleasure in seeing the form of Vishnu. So he wanted to really show him like thousands of Vishnus all at once and give him spiritual pleasure manifesting as his worshipable Lord at the end of the pastime as many, many Vishnu forms. So let's see. When Krishna became these different calves and cows, it's described that all the cows had greater affection for their calves than they had previously, and the mothers had greater affection for their sons than they had previously, as much as they had for Krishna. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti, he mentions that actually Lord Balaram also noticed that he was feeling as much affection for these cowherd boys as he was for Krishna, and these calves as he was for Krishna. That was another feature that I don't think is mentioned in the Krishna book or in the Bhagavatam, but he mentioned that Lord Balaram also noticed that he had so much affection for these manifestations of Krishna. So I guess those are, I couldn't list every single point Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur made, but those are some of the more interesting ones. And then he also spoke about the prayers. But it was actually, I was never really encountered so much material available for one class. It was like overwhelming. You could spend like 2 or 3 hours studying, but I didn't really have 2 or 3 hours. So I think I'll go to these different prayers of Lord Brahma. And I'll chant the Sanskrit. If you know the Sanskrit, you can chant along. This is chapter 14 of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 3.
Jnane prayasamudapasya namante eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam stane stita shri gatam tanuvanmanobir
Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally, and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within these three worlds. So this particular prayer shows up in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. At one point, Lord Chaitanya was asking Ramananda Roy the process by which to attain perfection. And he started out by saying, well, if you just do your Vanashram duty as offering to Krishna, that way you can attain perfection. And then Lord Chaitanya said, no, no, that's external. And then he offered another option, and then another option. And finally, and Lord Chaitanya rejected them all, saying, no, that's external, that's external, that's external. And finally, he quoted this verse. And that was the first thing that Lord Chaitanya accepted out of the different proposals. And the key points are that one has to, the tendency is to think we can understand everything with our own intellect. And that continues up to understanding God with our own intellect. So the first point is that we have to give up that idea. I'm so intelligent, I can figure out God and what He's doing and everything. And then if we can do that, then all we have to do, and we don't have to change our, another feature of the verse is, some people think they have to change their position in society to actually realize God. But that's not actually our philosophy. Even if we understand from Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna was very, very upset when Arjuna proposed to change his position in society. Actually, Arjuna's position in society was he was a Kshatriya, a warrior. And when he proposed to live by begging or something like a Brahmana, and give up on the war, Lord Krishna was very much upset. And actually he spoke at least two verses which say that it's much better to perform your duty in society, even imperfectly, than it is to abandon that duty and accept another duty and perform that perfectly. So this idea of staying in your social position is very highly valued in the Vedic culture. So that's quite all right and recommended. And then the other feature of this verse is that while staying in that position, while abandoning speculative knowledge, what you have to do is you have to hear descriptions of the pastimes, activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by that hearing, we can actually conquer Krishna, who is unconquerable. And that's not so hard to understand, because the hearing about somebody is it's a manifestation of love, actually. I was on Sunday we had this program, this memorial service for Stacy, and so many people came to hear about Stacy. Why? Because they had some love for her. And also we like it when people like to hear about ourselves too. We understand that means they have some love for us. Sometimes I'm traveling around the world and somebody will tell me that they read my blog. You know, we've been hearing about we heard Brahmananda mentioned as visiting Japan and getting Prabhupada's books printed with Dhyanapan. I saw Brahmananda Prabhu and he told me that he read my journal, and I thought, wow, Brahmananda read my journal. And so we're attracted to people hearing about us, ourselves. So Krishna is attracted to people hearing about him. And if we show Krishna love by loving to hear about him, then he will reveal himself out of reciprocation for that love. So it's a very ecstatic verse. It's one that some people memorize, and it's recommended by Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada quoted it a lot. So was it one of the ones we memorized too, or no? That one? No, Gane. Yeah, so next year. There's so many good verses, it's hard to include them all. So the next one I'll just address is I'll just mention that quickly. It's actually literally the next verse in the chapter. Let's see. Shayashtitim bhaktim buddhasti te vibho klashanti ik kevala
bodhalabhate te shamaso klesala eva shishite nanyadyata stula tusha bhagatinam.
My dear Lord, devotional service to you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. So that's really continuing the theme that not by our speculation will we attain Krishna. If we try, we actually will miss out altogether, and the only result is, the only gain will be the trouble that we took to do it. That it sort of goes along with the Bhagavad Gita. There's this famous verse, 12:5, klesha dikataraste samavyakta sakta cheta samavyakta hi gathir dukam devyadbir vapite, talking about those who speculate on the impersonal future. They, for them, advancement is very, very troublesome. It's difficult to make progress on that path for those who aren't embodied. So the next one is a very famous one, which Kalakanta Prabhu was mentioning, that we all memorized. And so I guess we'll chant it responsively, and then I'll have three people chant it from just to show that they really did memorize it. Tatenu kampam shukshamikshamano puntana evatna kritam vibhakam vidvagva purbir vividana maste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. Anyone like to chant? Where?
Namaste.
Anybody else?
Tatenu kampam shukshamikshamano undane vatna kritam vipakam vibhagva purbir vividam namaste.
One more. Everybody else? Kegadamadari.
Tenu kampam shukshamikshamaro. Dane vatna kutam vipakam. So in the memorization of verses, the important feature is to practice them. So you have to fit in your life. Once you've already memorized them, it's not enough to say, hey, I memorized it. But you have to every month or every week or at least every week or every month, you have to go over the verses that you memorized. Otherwise, they will not remain memorized, but they will become forgotten. And I've forgotten whole chapters of Bhagavad Gita and had to re-memorize them. So I vowed this, I'm never going to do that again. So so you can also try to fit it in your life. Sometime maybe when you're in the shower, you can memorize verses, or while you're driving, when you're waiting at a stoplight, you can go over your verses. Just, there's different times we're waiting for the street light to change so you can cross the street. There's different times when there's nothing going on in your life, and then you can just think about your verses and go through them, and yeah, that way you won't forget them. So, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past deeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So the idea is if something bad happens, we don't blame God, but we understand, oh, it's my karma that I'm suffering in this way. And because we're cultivating devotion to God, we understand, actually, it's not my karma, it's a reduced version of our karma that's specially designed by Krishna for us to develop spiritually. So we are getting off easy, actually. So we shouldn't be upset. And while we're suffering with our body, mind, and words, we offer obeisances and devotion to the Lord. And if we can go through our suffering conditions in that condition, then we inherit the kingdom of God. Yeah. So that's another... That's a very, very important verse, and that's why Kalakanta Prabhu had us memorize it. So keep practicing it, and well, next October when I come back, we'll go over it again. There's this other verse here, which we'll mention. Guna manas tepi guna vimatum hitav. Tirnasya ka ishalesya kalena yarva vimita sakalpair u pamshava ke mihika dupasa. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, or the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and the other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? So this is another verse in the theme that God is so great that we can't possibly understand his greatness. So how is that greatness appreciated? It's through devotion. Then Krishna reveals himself. And we all learned that very recently in our study of nectar devotion. Does anybody remember the verse that describes that? Yeah. You can say the whole thing. That way we'll remember it. Yeah. It explains that our blunt material senses can't grasp Krishna. But when we engage in devotional service, beginning with the tongue, he reveals himself. Then, although he's inconceivable, we can conceive of him to a certain extent. And this is another famous one. Atapi te deva padambujam dvaya prasada lesha nugrahi te vihi tanati tatam bhagavan mahimno tachanye kopi turam vichinvan. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace, Prabhupada makes calls to our attention this word lesha, which means just a teeny bit, even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand your supreme personality, understand the supreme personality of Godhead, are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So, Brahma, he was the supreme Vedic scholar. He was the person who received the Vedic knowledge from within the heart by Krishna himself. But he's saying, even he, who's the greatest Vedic scholar, admits, I can't understand Krishna by the strength of my knowledge. So this verse comes up. One place this idea comes up in is the pastimes of King Prataparudra, who was a great king of Orissa, who wanted to get the association of Lord Chaitanya. But because he was a king, and Lord Chaitanya was a renunciate, he didn't want to see him. Because kings are absorbed and have all kinds of wealth and all kinds of association with the opposite sex. And sometimes they have many, many queens. And Lord Chaitanya is the ideal sannyasi. He didn't want to have anything to do with this king. But he was a great devotee of the Lord. And he wanted to meet Lord Chaitanya. So, but at one point there was the Rath Yatra ceremony in Jagannath Puri, and this King Prataparudra he swept the street in front of the Rath cart, even though he was the big king of Orissa that everybody was worshiping. He showed by this action that he considered himself insignificant in front of Lord Jagannath, and he swept the street. And it's described that because he did that little bit of devotional service, that Lord Chaitanya said, okay, I'll give him my association. And then he set up a very beautiful situation where he could the king massaged Lord Chaitanya's body when he was tired from dancing, and he recited the chapter, Gopi Gita chapter from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has that very amazing verse in it, which is our memorization verse of the month. So that's an example. Just one act of devotion can capture the Lord's mind, and he can reveal himself. And we're sort of running out of time, so I'll just do one more. It's actually from this chapter. It's not by Brahma himself, but it's mentioned in this chapter, and Prabhupada quotes it in Bhagavad Gita. So, and it's sort of pretty also. Samastritaye padapavalam plavam mahat padam punya yashomararir padam birivatsa padam 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 yadavi padam natesham. For those who've accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who's the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoof print. Their goal is Parampadam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. Yeah, sure. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of this material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoof print. Their goal is Parampadam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there's danger at every step. So sometimes it's explained that they can cross over it because by approaching the lotus feet of the Lord, the whole ocean, it shrinks down to this size, and they could just step over it. We can't step over an ocean, but by the mercy of the Lord, when you approach Him, the ocean itself becomes small, and you can just step on. So that's some of the many, many beautiful prayers in this chapter, and at least we should memorize the one that we're supposed to memorize for this month. And practice them every week or month or so we don't forget them. And Brahma, remember, he's the head of our sampradaya. He's our Param Guru, and he is a very special person in our line. And his prayers have, because he's the first living being, the person who's inspired from within by Krishna himself, he's a very special living entity, and his prayers are full of special, special realization. Yeah. So thank you so much. It's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yeah, just one point while we're setting up. Thank you very much, Krishna Kripa Prabhu. You might find it Prabhu. Very learned. Well done. And tomorrow Derek is going to comment on the Kaliya pastimes, right? this chapter is very poignant because it comprises chapters 13 and 14 of the 10th canto. And chapter 13 was the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada translated. So that was when he left this world, just as he ended chapter 13. Yes. So he just, in the last verse he translated in Srimad Bhagavatam was the one where Lord Brahma prays, stands up, and then begins to speak. So that's the last verse of the 13th chapter. Then the 14th chapter begins his prayers. And that was the where Hridayananda Maharaj took up the translation. So a very poignant chapter. Okay.
Some of the prayers we have translations by Prabhupada for because they are quoted in other places. So and Hridayananda Goswami whenever Prabhupada translated one, he would put Prabhupada's translation. Like,
were there any quick questions on anything we read? Yes. Madan means Cupid, and Madan Mohan is one who bewilders even Cupid. Cupid bewilders everybody, but Krishna bewilders Cupid. Right? And then Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini, because she bewilders the one who bewilders even Cupid. Yes, Tamada?
In Bhagavad Gita, it was like Arjuna tactfully addressed Krishna to serve the meaning. Like, if you had some doubt, he'll address Krishna and not as Krishna.
Yes. In that verse, the killer of the demon Mura. Brahma was testing Krishna because his idea of God is Vishnu. See, Vishnu gave birth to Brahma from a lotus flower, so that was his concept of God. And he was seeing Krishna doing all these amazing things, and he said, "What's going on? Let me test." So that's when he took away his friends, just to see what he would do. And then he was jiu-jitsu.